welcome to the Tension Podcast with the Archipelago of Design. I'm your host, Donna DuPont, and today joining me is Oliver Jones. He is a researcher with the Archipelago of Design and emerging scholar of war studies. He explores literary approaches to strategy and combines his curiosity as a humanities scholar with the creativity of storytelling and divergent outside thinking to support the education of defense and security professionals. Welcome, Oliver.
Good morning, Donna. How are you doing?
Great. So thank you so much for joining us on today's podcast from the beautiful Center for Social Innovation in downtown Toronto. So to begin, let's just jump right in. And we want to learn more about you and your work here. So tell us about, you know, your design story, a bit about you and your journey and your role at the Archipelago of Design.
So my journey into design started when I was a TA in the Cultural Studies Department at McMaster in Hamilton. And I had a kind of an advanced student who I had a relationship with who was a pretty smart guy. He was a philosophy student. And he brought me an article about a general named Shimon Neve. And Shimon Neve, who is looked on often as the father or the grandfather of military design. And so Shimon Neve had a very rich and sophisticated language for talking about military strategy, which was informed by fields like systems thinking, but also fields like continental philosophy, cybernetics. And as soon as I started reading about that, I was hooked on the topic. So I moved on to a PhD a few years later, and I was looking for a project that would break out of some of the confines of studying literature and would get in touch more with policy, governance, things that have an impact in the world. And I was naturally drawn towards his work as a project that could make a bridge between those two fields, between literature and decision making. So as this project developed, this was about 5 years ago, I first got in touch with Philippe Bulot-Brassard, who's been kind of a mentor to me since, where he was working at Canadian Forces College in Toronto. And I realized that Toronto was, by coincidence, like a hub for this kind of research. From there, I got in touch with people like Dr. Ofer Gracier, Philippe Dufour, Paul Mitchell, and they slowly initiated me into this world of design. I started as a researcher at AOD in 2020, and I've been hooked since.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much for sharing a bit of your backstory. You're right. Toronto has become a bit of a hub here in Ottawa, too, for design in Canada, a military design. And it's definitely nice to have that connection with the Canadian Forces College. So now that you're at AOD, I understand you've been working on a couple of different projects. And one of them is a game design called Shadows of Byzantium.
Yes.
So tell us a bit about that.
So it's set in the city of Istanbul, Turkey, in the year 2040. Now, the Istanbul of 2040 is very different from the Istanbul of 2024. And the world of 2040 is very different from the world of 2024 as well. Turkey is on the cusp of entry into the European Union. Turkey has kind of cleaned up the corruption that is sort of endemic to Turkish society and has become a very kind of good faith partner in a NATO ecosystem that is much more focused on human security and humanitarian interventions. So a pandemic breaks out. It's a respiratory disease. There's an obvious sort of parallel with COVID there. And it's creating a great deal of unrest in the city that is starting to threaten a lot of the progress that Turkey and Europe has made towards kind of reconciling these differences. And through their investigation, they're essentially supposed to get to the bottom of a complex set of issues that have the potential to impact European and global security.
Excellent. Okay, that sounds really fascinating. So this is a plausible scenario that was developed, kind of taking world events from today, but really looking at a world of 2040 and what if situation.
Yes, that's exactly it. If you followed some tendencies from today, where would they possibly lead us to in 15 to 20 years?
Excellent. That's great. Is there, just curious, like how did you develop this game story?
So it came about in a couple stages. Initially, we actually ran a kind of an open competition where we invited AOD members to contribute to scenario design before a panel of judges. So we had four scenarios, all in very different settings. There was one around an infrastructure in North Africa. There was the migration issues in the Caucasus. There was the scenario about the pandemic outbreak in Turkey. The Istanbul scenario around the pandemic outbreak won the competition. Now, it's one thing to have a PowerPoint of a scenario, and it's another thing to have a complete world that is peopled and inhabited, and you believe in it. So the design process from there involved a backcasting exercise, which involved imagining a future that's quite different from our own. And I worked with these interns who were very talented students, in international relations and political science, on charting a path from how we got to 2024 to 2040, and this world that looks really different from our own. And now they have all sorts of different interests and training and biases. So they developed their own kind of unique language. And I mean, the process for me was essentially just providing them guidance so that they could tease out the threads of meaning, that players could unravel through the investigation of the game.
So why was Istanbul selected as the city to feature in this game?
That's a good question. I could give you a partial window into that, because I was not on the winning team, unfortunately, that selected that scenario. But to me, Istanbul, which if you know the geography, is essentially kind of on the bridge between Europe and Asia. And for centuries, maybe even millennia, it's been kind of the transition point between Europe and Asia. So it is seen as Europe, it is seen as Asia. So it's kind of like the familiar other, which means that we have a lot of preconceptions about what that space is and what it could be, which means that it's a really useful way for exploring players' own biases and their own thinking about the world and the relationship with others.
So it sounds like a fascinating scenario and game. Curious, who was involved in the designing the game narrative, and what was that journey like?
It is the work of a multitude of people. I've been no more than an editor in that process. Occasionally, I intervene with some creative choices. Ofer Gracher was one of the key designers of the scenario. I would be remiss to not mention Cassie Miedema's input on this. She's been indispensable. And there are a number of interns. I have six interns from the Richardson Institute, all with very different sets of interests and expertise that have been producing their own storylines.
So getting back into the actual game itself, who is this game being designed for?
That's a great question. When we started with our first game, Arctic Albatross, we had a very particular focus on the education of military officers and probably defense and security professionals who were sort of in a mid to senior role. But what we learned through the success of that game and the appeal of it to a much broader group of players than we'd imagined, that it has value as an experience for a variety of different kinds of professionals and students and educators. Those might be people in government, but it might also be people studying international relations, health sciences, political sciences, public administration.
Well, essentially, this is a very wide audience that could really benefit from playing this game and learn through the experience of working through some of the complexities.
The thing that strikes me, and we've done dozens of playthroughs at this point, is the difference in the responses you get from different audiences. Like when you play Arctic Albatross with mid-level military officers, they have a very particular focus. Like they'll look at specific tracks and they'll say, this is a security threat, and so this is a governance issue, and this is the way we need to respond. If you play the same scenario with students, undergrads, they look at it through a totally different lens. They're concerned about indigenous issues. They see it as an issue of colonialism. And so they come to totally different solutions and interpretations of the events and the issues that they're seeing. So it's a bit of a Rorschach test in the sense that you can experience this and you will learn things about yourself in the process that you might not otherwise contemplate. And you learn things about the people that you're playing with that you wouldn't otherwise realize. They might have skill sets you don't recognize, soft skills, that kind of thing.
That's fascinating. So what's the experience like based on your previous experience with Arctic Albatross? How do players, those who engage with these games, what's the experience like for them?
Well, we strive to run the game in a very immersive way, which means from the second that you enter the room, you get the sense that this is a different experience than you're used to. We strive to make the world believable, your relationship with the game master believable, so that you can step outside of yourself to have these kind of breakthroughs, these revelations. It takes about half a day to run through it. There are shorter and longer versions of it, depending on what you want to get out of the game. Generally, we recommend like a 3 to 4 hour playthrough, which will allow you to go through a couple phases of the gameplay and develop some rich answers about what's happening in the world.
That's great. And does the game generate a lot of conversation?
Yeah, it's all about sense making. And, you know, we try to provide as many sort of aids, prompts, that kind of thing to help players develop their own thinking. And it's really interesting because you see them, I mean, this is particularly true with military audiences. In the first phase of gameplay, they want to use tools that they know. They want to use planning tools. They want to use the OPP or the MDMP. As they start working through the complexities of what's happening in the world, they realize that they need to develop kind of their own approach that hasn't really been mandated for them. And it's always different. We'll be running a number of demonstrations and in fact, actually training for GMs at our annual symposium in Lisbon in September. And if you're interested, if you're outside of Canada or the GTA and you're interested in a playthrough, you can always get in touch with one of our regional hubs.
Fantastic. So what we can do is we can put some of those links on our webpage for those that are interested if they want to get involved with game testing or other demonstrations or just overall information on the game. We'll make that available. So thank you so much, Oliver, for really walking us through this game that's coming out very soon, Shadows of Byzantium. It's very exciting. A lot of work has gone into it. So before we close this podcast, do you have any final thoughts that you want to share with our audience?
So as a lover of pulp fictions, like things like cyberpunk, things like detective literature, I get a real thrill not only running these games, but watching people play them. So I'm excited to meet who's ever up for this experience in the coming months.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much, Oliver, for joining us for today's podcast. Really appreciate you taking the time to walk us through the game and all the exciting activities that are upcoming in the next few months.
Thanks for having me today.